I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is singer Isaac Sutton, Israeli musical theater and concert star who has introduced the Great American Songbook to Israeli audiences. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Shinshinim, Chen Denachi and Tamir Shakuri. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. There is a deep human need many of us have to build something enduring, something that will continue after we ourselves are gone. We want to feel that we are a part of an entity greater than us, that we have made a material difference in living our lives. For many people throughout history, this has taken the form of creating a physical structure, a great building project. For others, it's committing to serving a country in a dedicated way. Still others find purpose in working to create financial success, or making a work of art or music or theater or literature that has lasting value. Some see their families as their greatest works. It's true that not everyone has high ambitions for furthering their posterity, but many, perhaps most of us, do. We want to change the world, or at least enhance it in meaningful ways that will outlast us. Judaism provides a prime example of a person who wished to transform the world based on a different kind of enduring project, a change in the way we perceive God and understand faith. In the Torah this week, we begin the story of Abraham, first person who can truly be called a Jew, whose choice to dedicate himself to the belief in one God and to practicing a form of ethical monotheism changed all Western religion. Coming of age in a world in which no one conceived of God as a unity, Abraham, first called Abram, sought a higher concept than lots of gods making lots of ethical points of view. He had the pristine, powerful belief that there was only one God, and that one God had the power and authority to create a world of meaning, purpose, and beauty. For Jews, it's not the buildings, or the organizations, or the wealth that determines success in passing on values. It's not even the number of children or grandchildren that we engender. It's the way we are able to carry on the vision of our great founder, Abraham, and maintain a commitment to that one God, to advance his unified concept of a world that God created based on justice and holiness. That's the true challenge of being Jewish. And the great gift, to strive to make the world reflect the moral beauty of this quest on a daily basis. To play us in, here's our guest this morning, Isaac Sutton, singing one of my favorite American musical theater compositions from Man of La Mancha.
Hear me now, O thou bleak and unbearable world, thou art base and debauched as can be. And the knight, with his banners all bravely unfurled, now hurls down his gauntlet to thee. I am I, Don Quixote, the Lord of La Mancha, destroyer of evil am I. I will march to the sound of the trumpets of glory, forever to conquer. And serpents of sin, all your dastardly doings are past. For a holy endeavor is now to begin, and virtue shall triumph at last. I am my Don Quixote, the Lord of La Mancha, a name all the world soon will know. Then the wild winds of fortune will carry away whithersoever they blow. whithersoever they blow. Onward to glory I go.
That was our guest this morning, bass baritone Isaac Sutton, who's introduced the Great American Songbook, wonderful musical standards of the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s to Israeli audiences in very successful concert tours. He's bringing his singing to New York. You can meet him when we return in a moment right here on Too Jewish.
Learn to make challah at the 4th Annual Tucson Mega Challah Bake on Thursday, October 26th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Tucson JCC. This Mega Challah Bake is in collaboration with Chabad Tucson and sells out, so please register early. Registration closes on October 23rd or when we sell out, so please register today. Learn to make, knead, and braid beautiful, delicious challah for your Shabbat table. Bring your mom, your daughters, and your friends. A great family event for women and girls ages 9 and older. For tickets, go to megahallatucson.com.
To welcome our guest, here's a little of his rendition of the classic standard, Nature Boy.
Strange, enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little shy and sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day, one magic day, he passed my way. And while we spoke of many things, fools and kings.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning. Isaac Sutton is perhaps the greatest Israeli practitioner of classic songs. In the last decade, he has won a series of awards as a singing sensation internationally, a bass baritone whose career spans opera, musical theater, the traditional songbook, and has performed all over Israel and will be performing soon again there. Welcome, and thanks for coming on Too Jewish.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be with you.
All right. So this is a really important question. Where did you go wrong? How does somebody from Israel end up becoming kind of the Harry Connick Jr. of contemporary pop?
Well, you know, I mean, this is what I've always dreamed of doing. I mean, ever since I can remember, I loved the Great American Songbook And it is truly a privilege to be able to bring it to Israelis over the last decade or so. But even more thrilling is, you know, to come now to New York City and do my show at Feinstein's 54 Below, which is a venue that I've always loved. And I'm getting ready for the concert there coming up October 21st.
So, you know, it's an interesting choice. Israelis love music. And as you said, they haven't really been familiar with the Great American Songbook. Musicals have made it in Israel, but by and large sung in Hebrew. How was it initially achieving acceptance?
Well, you know, with my first show that I produced, I mean, I finished my MBA at Tel Aviv University, and then I decided to try, you know, my luck somewhere else. And that's when I produced my first show called Broadway and All That Jazz, which was then accepted to the Camery Theater in Tel Aviv. And ever since then, you know, it's been very well accepted, and it's something that I'm very excited to be doing.
Who are your favorite composers?
Well, I would have to say George Gershwin is certainly one of my favorite composers, but I'm very much into musical theater, too, so... you know, aside from my one-man shows that I do in Israel, I've been lucky to be doing theater as well, especially musical theater. Yeah, combining all that together is always a thrill.
There have been other Israelis. I remember Dudu Fischer singing and starring in Les Miserables. There have been other Israelis who've had success, but by and large, they've also been prominent in other genres. You've sung opera. What was the track for you?
The track. Well, I started out, as I said, you know, with one-man shows. But I didn't want to limit myself to only one genre. And I guess having a bass baritone voice, which could, you know, do a crossover thing. So I guess that means I could also do opera work and musical theater and combine those genres. And I guess I'm very lucky that way. So as long as, you know, I can keep on doing that, that's great.
In a few moments here on Too Jewish, we'll hear much more from our guest, Isaac Sutton.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You have been taking us through Odessa and Kiev, talking about the Jewish communities there and your experience on a recent trip taking people back to, well, in this case, Ukraine, not really Russia, that you'd taken to Russia years ago. Kiev is a fascinating place. You mentioned last week how it seemed like everybody there has a Jewish grandparent, still a substantial Jewish population. What's it like now?
Well, apart from the fact that there are two really big synagogues that are active and a lot of smaller Minyanim, Chavurot, whatever, around town. There's also two kosher restaurants that are really glatt kosher, and this mattered because in our group, there were three or four people who really were kosher to the point of not even being willing to eat salads in a non-kosher restaurant. Mm. So we had agreed in advance that in every city we would take the whole group at least once to a kosher restaurant, and that the really kosher people could arrange with that restaurant either to deliver food to the hotels, or that they could return to that restaurant on their own once they'd been there with the group and have other meals. Interestingly, they never chose to do that. They brought their own food to some extent from Israel. Some would go to the markets and buy like fresh fruits and vegetables and cut them up with their own kalim, their own cutlery, whatever. But Kiev was the one place where there was a big choice and where you had a sense that the actual Jewish community there was a lot bigger than the official numbers. And that sense even starts with the airport. First of all, of all these cities, Kiev was the only one that actually has two functioning commercial airports. And the one into which we flew and out of which we flew, which is Borispol, is very far from the city. It can be, if there's traffic, it can take 2 hours. Without traffic, it's 45 minutes, but that's at 2 a.m. and on a highway. But it's huge and extremely busy. Kiev, if it took a little bit better care of itself, would be a very attractive tourist destination that would rival Moscow and Leningrad. It's got a lot of great buildings, a lot of cultural stuff, a lot of history. Unfortunately for Jews, a lot of the history is painful. I mean, that soil, not only at Babi Yar, is sort of soaked in Jewish blood. And there's a big statue in the middle of town to Bogdan Khmelnytsky, who was their hero from the 17th century, but best known to the Jewish people for leading bloody pogroms and butchering.
The worst pogroms maybe in all human history.
Or certainly the most violent. Right. But, you know, the overwhelming impression that you leave Kiev with is that in some ways, even though it's post-Soviet and it's an independent country, they still hew to the Soviet line that the Jews were not a particular victim people, that Soviet citizens were victims of the Nazis. And so there's very little mention of Jews as such at Babi Yar. And two side comments about that. This, first of all, the fact that there's any mention at all is due to the famous poem by Yevgeny Yevtushenko that says, Nadbab im yar mpamyat nikovnyet, which means at Babi Yar there are no monuments, meaning to the Jews. And he was protesting against institutionalized Soviet anti-Semitism, which throughout the Soviet Union is still there to one degree or another. And the other aspect of this that I found sad and I think left people in our group feeling frustrated is that fully as much attention is given at Babi Yar to the three guys on a football team or the 12 guys on a newspaper who were killed as to the thousands and thousands and thousands of
Jews
mowed down at Babi Yar. Right. And it just still seems incredibly unfair and incredibly tragic. And the only sign that specifically refers to Jews doesn't mention Jews. It happens to be in Hebrew, and it says, "Demei achicha tzoakim alai min ha'adama."
Yeah, your blood of your brother cries to me from the ground.
Right, that's
from
it.
Genesis, right?
And it's not even the source of that. The book of Genesis isn't
that
even
doesn't
cited.
Even include that it's a Jewish text.
Right.
Thanks, Tom. We say that anti-Semitism is the most enduring human hatred in history, and I think it's true.
Seems like it might be.
Thanks, Tom. We welcome our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Bariel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So I asked you a question earlier. When are the Israeli elections? And tell us your answer.
I don't have a clue.
No clue. No idea.
I know there is a law, you know, in Israel that it's like the first or second Tuesday in
1 month or another, and maybe it's November.
Yeah,
and
maybe it's November. But if I'm not mistaken, it's never happened on the due date.
When it was really supposed to happen.
No, so, never.
So let's talk about the difference between Israeli elections and American elections. American presidential election starts as soon as the last election's over, just about. It's a four-year cycle. The last two and a half or something, nonstop attention paid to it. It costs literally billions of dollars. And everybody is talking about it or discussing it unless they totally hate politics. And even those people talk about it. Israel's not like that at all.
No, the only, I think the only commonality is that also the election in Israel starts as soon as the the new elections.
As soon as the first, well, actually,
yeah,
in Israel, the government
common,
might change two
yeah,
months after.
Yeah, yeah,
or you
yeah.
have the election, somebody's supposed to form the government, they can't do it, and now you have another election.
Yeah, but it's so fragile. It's a very fragile system that, you know, trying to represent the different voices in Israel and try to build, you know, a coalition, you know, 61 members of the Knesset.
Because right, there's 120 people in
yeah,
Knesset,
120,
you need a majority, 61.
Yeah, yeah.
And that 61 can be made up of eight political parties.
Yes,
or something,
eight
right?
small political parties that three of them can, you know, have a bad day and decide, you know, that one of the laws that being proposed and nothing is like out of this. It's all examples that I'm giving you. That
no, everything. It's all happened.
Yeah, it's all happened. You know, and then they will resign and that's it.
And the
Knesset
government's over. You need a new election. And you
yeah,
have to
and this
again.
One, the current one is 61. It's like really
just
like
61.
Last one was 80 something. So like
it's a bigger coalition,
like really and powerful. You right. know, it could pass, you know, almost any law.
Any law that
but
right,
but it's not so true because the all the 80 yeah, members represented they, very different voices. So.
Very different agendas. So it's fascinating that somehow or other, the Prime Minister Netanyahu managed to be in power for 8 years. With a constantly changing coalition and elections sooner than expected, and it's not direct election. They were ahead of that for a little while.
Yeah.
Somehow or other, they managed to have some level of stability. And so what's the best way to describe the Israeli attitude towards their own government? It's a hard question, huh?
Yes, it's a very hard question. It's a very hard question. It's so divided. Right now, we're so divided. And I would say we were very divided before the last election. And it was so clear that, you know, we will face change, and we didn't. So I don't know really how to answer your question. Because I think, in a way, this government gives a little bit a feeling of security.
Yeah. It's the same people, and so there's some level of secure trust. I think that for me, it's that it'll be okay. Somehow or other, Israel will muddle through, and don't worry so much, even though people are very impassioned about it.
Amen.
Thanks, Oshrat. We'll talk next week.
Tada rabbi.
Whether or not there's an election. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7030.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A ship is sailing in a lonely part of the South Pacific when the captain sees smoke coming from what should be a deserted island. He steers for the island, and as he approaches it, he's startled to see that there's actually a full pier and a well-dressed man waits on the beautifully built dock. The captain crosses the gangplank, is welcomed by a man who says his name is Goldberg. "I'm astonished, Mr. Goldberg," says the captain. "How'd you get here, and how did you construct this magnificent dock?" "Oh," says Goldberg, "I was shipwrecked alone 5 years ago here. Lots of driftwood, some rope, a little elbow grease, plenty of time. Ha, but the dock is nothing. Come, see the rest of the island." So Goldberg leads the captain on a tour of the island, which includes a beautifully paved main street. He made the cement himself from seashells and coconut milk, a store, a school, every possible convenience. The captain oohs and ahs, but what really impresses him are the two magnificent buildings at the end of the street, both with stained glass windows. "My God, Goldberg, look at what you've done here with nothing but your bare hands. Amazing," says the captain. "But I'm curious, what are those two incredible buildings?" "Oh," says Goldberg, "those are the synagogues." "Amazing," the captain says. "Incredible, fantastic, but why do you need two of them?" "Well," says Goldberg, "the one on the right is my shul. The one on the left, I wouldn't be caught dead in." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, a classic this time, a special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now, a word of Torah. This week we read the great portion of Lech Lecha, which includes God's commandment to Abram, Avram. Lech Lecha me'artzecha mi'moladetcha mi'beit avicha. Leave. Go from your country, your homeland, and the house of your father to a land that I will show you. It's the beginning of monotheism, the belief in one God. It's the beginning of Judaism, and it will prove to be the beginning of our connection to the land of Israel as well. It is a dramatic and powerful moment. The fascinating thing about Lech Lecha is not that God commands Abram, later to be renamed Abraham, to leave everything he has known. After all, if he is going to create a new religion and remake belief in our world, he will need to leave polytheism and a pagan society that doesn't recognize the concept of justice, certainly not supreme justice, or true divine power. If you want to live a life of goodness and blessing, you need to leave home to do it. So Abraham picks up and leaves the sophisticated, morally challenged city-states of Babylon. He journeys outward to find God and to found a new religion. That journey of differentiation was pivotal to all human history. If Abraham doesn't just do what God commands, there is no Judaism or Christianity or Islam or monotheism or really Western civilization at all. But what's most fascinating about Abraham's actions in this week's Torah portion of Lech Lecha is that after God commands him to go, he simply goes without argument or controversy. That strikes me as a very un-Jewish approach. After all, the essence of Jewish culture seems to be argument and discussion. If you were directed to leave everything you'd known and told to move somewhere unspecified, wouldn't you at least complain a little? Please don't think that Abraham is incapable of arguing with God. In fact, he proves in next week's Torah portion of Vayera that he will argue and bargain with God to the last degree, as he does, trying to defend the few righteous men of Sodom and Gomorrah. No, something else is at work. The essential understanding that we all have that sometimes you just gotta move on, leave what you know, embrace the journey. In order to fully realize who we can become, we must first leave who we have been. It's an exciting, exhilarating, daunting prospect, dangerous yet essential. If we can choose to take the first steps, we, like Abraham, may reap rich rewards. When we return on to Jewish, our guest, singer Isaac Sutton, will explain how he communicates the classic American songs to an Israeli audience, what musicals he'd love to do, and more when we come back in a moment right here on Too Jewish.
Learn to make challah at the 4th Annual Tucson Mega Challah Bake on Thursday, October 26th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Tucson JCC. This Mega Challah Bake is in collaboration with Chabad Tucson and sells out, so please register early. Registration closes on October 23rd or when we sell out. so please register today. Learn to make, knead, and braid beautiful, delicious challah for your Shabbat table. Bring your mom, your daughters, and your friends. A great family event for women and girls ages 9 and older. For tickets, go to megahallahtucson.com.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Last week, President Donald Trump asked Congress to effectively amend the Iran nuclear agreement. He said he would outright pull the U.S. out of the deal if he was not happy with the result. In a White House speech unveiling a comprehensive Iran policy, more or less, Trump told U.S. lawmakers to legislate triggers that would reimpose sanctions were Iran not to meet conditions stricter than those in the original deal. Trump wants to add permanent restrictions on Iranian uranium enrichment, which are to be loosened within the next decade under the agreement, to stop its development of intercontinental ballistic missiles, which the deal does not address. Key House and Senate leaders are drafting legislation that would amend the Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act to strengthen enforcement, prevent Iran from developing an intercontinental ballistic missile, and make all restrictions on Iran's nuclear activity permanent under U.S. law, Trump said. I support these initiatives. Trump triggered the legislative review by refusing to declare Iran in compliance with the 2015 deal between six world powers, including the U.S. and Iran, which trades sanctions relief for a rollback of Iran's nuclear program. By law, Trump must certify Iran's compliance every 90 days. Without Trump's certification, Congress has 60 days to reimpose sanctions. Trump could have, but did not, reimpose sanctions by himself. Trump referred to Republican-led legislation being drafted in Congress by Senators Bob Corker of Tennessee and Tom Cotton of Arkansas, both Republicans, that would toughen the deal's requirements along the lines he's describing. Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, Republican also, said he was ready to press ahead with the legislation. The president's decision not to certify that the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, for those keeping score, is in the vital national security interests of the U.S., now provides the opportunity for Congress to strengthen the Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act and create a standard for certification consistent with our interests, McConnell said. But it seems unlikely Congress will amend the act. Doing so requires 60 votes in the Senate and Democratic backing. Democrats, who hold 48 of the Senate's 100 seats, have already declared their opposition to amending the deal. In case Congress does not act or is not sufficiently tough in its actions to please Trump, the president pledged to pull the U.S. out of the deal simply by reimposing sanctions, as he is entitled to do. Trump and congressional Republicans want U.S. allies, particularly the three European nations who helped shape the deal, France, Britain, and Germany, to join in the effort to toughen the deal. Those nations, however, reiterated their position that they were opposed to renegotiating the deal just last week, although they were ready to strengthen non-nuclear sanctions, as are Democrats in the Senate. The International Atomic Energy Agency has repeatedly confirmed Iran's compliance with the JCPOA through its long-term verification and monitoring program, the three governments said in a joint statement. Therefore, we encourage the U.S. administration and Congress to consider the implications to the security of the U.S. and its allies before taking any steps that might undermine the Iran agreement, such as reimposing sanctions on Iran lifted under it. The statement said that Britain, France, and Germany were ready to work with the U.S. to squeeze Iran for non-nuclear activities, including missile testing and military adventurism. Israel's government, however, welcomed Trump's policy. President Trump has just created an opportunity to fix this bad deal, Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu said, to roll back Iran's aggression, to confront its criminal support of terrorism. That's why Israel embraces this opportunity, and so should every leader responsible for the security of the world. In contrast, Iran's government responded the deal was not open to renegotiation, that if the U.S. were to violate its terms, it would reconsider its nuclear options. The Islamic Republic of Iran will not be first to withdraw from the deal, but if its rights and interests in the deal are not respected, it will stop implementing all its commitments and will resume its peaceful nuclear program without restrictions, said the foreign minister of Iran.
In other news, in Vienna, Austria, Sebastian Kurz, head of the center-right Austrian People's Party, or OVP, at 31 years old, will become Europe's youngest leader after elections last week. His party came first with 30.2% of the vote. Unfortunately, the far-right Freedom Party, or FPO, came in second in Austria with 26.9% of the vote, slightly ahead of the center-left Social Democrats of outgoing Chancellor Christian Kern. This is the highest a far-right party has ever finished in Austrian elections. The European Jewish Congress congratulated Kurz on his victory, called on him to form a coalition of centrist parties and not be beholden to the party of the far right in his new government. A party which is run on a platform of xenophobic intolerance and the targeting of immigrants must not be granted a seat at the governing table, said European Jewish Congress President Dr. Moshe Kantor. World Jewish Congress President Ron Lauder, who was the U.S. ambassador to Austria from 86 to 87, said, "It is sad and distressing that such a platform should receive more than a quarter of the vote and become Austria's second party. It is still full of xenophobes and racists and is, mildly put, very ambiguous towards Austria's Nazi past." Lauder called the election results in many respects worse than Kurt Waldheim's election as president of Austria 30 years ago. Today's FPO is far beyond acceptable democratic limits. Lauder also strongly warned against the Freedom Party in any governing coalition. Like the AfD in Germany, the National Front in France, or Jobbik in Hungary, the FPO is an extremist party that panders to racists and anti-Semites and whips up feelings against minorities, Ron Lauder said. It is led by a man who in his youth expressed clear sympathies for the Nazis. In its present state, the FPO is not and should not be a party of government. The election appears to be a result of the refugee crisis in Europe. Kurz, currently foreign minister, ran his whole campaign around the question of limiting migration, while the Freedom Party ran on a hard-line anti-Islam platform. Austria accepted one of the highest proportions of refugees during the 2015 crisis. There are currently only about 9,000 Jews living in Austria, primarily in Vienna. And a feel-good story arrived from England last week. A British Muslim man sponsored a synagogue kiddish lunch to honor the late Jewish doctor who had treated him. The Muslim man, whose name was not released, asked to remain anonymous, paid for the post-prayer spread at the Kingston Surbiton and District Synagogue in South London to honor Dr. Tim Heyman, may he rest in peace, his gastroenterologist. The man first contacted the synagogue earlier this year in order to reconnect with Heyman, only to discover the doctor had died of a brain tumor a few months before. Since then, the Muslim man has become a regular at Shabbat and festival services and is studying Hebrew so he can better understand them. "My father taught me to respect anyone who did good things for me," the man explained, "and I believe in toleration and coexistence among all peoples and religions." He said he found the community warm and friendly and enjoyed the sound of the Hebrew prayers. "This is the first time a non-Jew has sponsored a kiddush at that synagogue," said the chair, Sheila Mann. "He comes to shul every Shabbat and often says how much he loves attending services. He joined us for the whole of Yom Kippur and fasted all day. We are delighted to treat him as a part of the communal family." Good story. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Isaac Sutton is perhaps the most prominent Israeli practitioner of the Great American Songbook, a musical theater star with a background in opera, whose one-man shows have become kind of must-see attractions, not only in Israel, but also now in New York. Welcome back to Two Jewish.
Thank you so much.
In performing in English in Israel, and you also perform in Hebrew, when you put your shows together in Israel, do you primarily focus just on English, the American Songbook? Do you do stuff in translation? How do you choose what you're going to do?
So basically, when I do my shows in Israel, I do try to combine both languages, English and Hebrew. So I would translate some of the verses of the Great American Songbook to Hebrew to make it more accessible and, I guess, understandable to the Israeli listeners. But when, you know, when I do my shows here in New York City, I do a lot more English language. But I actually also combine French and Italian, which are two languages that I love. You know, French, I studied at Allianz High School in Tel Aviv. I went to school, studied 7 years French, and I was, you know, that's how I fell in love with the French language and the French culture. So I always try to combine some French in my shows, and also Italian, a language that I've always loved.
I have to ask you about the Christian Chenoweth thing. Can you tell that story for our listeners?
Oh, sure. That took place actually exactly 2 years ago at the opening night at the Mayo Performing Arts Center. I was actually just there about a week ago, their recent opening night with Sutton Foster. But 2 years ago, it was opening night with Kristen Chenoweth, and I was asked to sing one song with her. It was a duet called For Good from the musical Wicked, and I'm actually going to be singing it again in my upcoming New York City concert at Feinstein's 54 Below, October 21st, this time with another Broadway star. Her name is Carrie St. Louis, who also played Glinda in Wicked. So it's really coming full circle that way.
No, but the story is you were just there in the audience and she randomly plucked you as a volunteer?
Yeah. Can you believe it?
No. Although it's true, I know. That's remarkable. And you came up and she just thought anybody in the audience could sing it with her?
I guess.
It's fantastic. It's a great story. If there was a musical that you could participate in, a musical you could star in, what would it be? Which one haven't you had the opportunity to do that you'd like to do?
Wow, that's a great question. Actually, the role that I always wanted to do, I actually have played it. It's Bobby in the musical Company, and that was done in Israel 4 years ago. And but if I have to think of another role, probably Javert in Les Mis. See, I'm a bass baritone singer, so I'm always cast as the bad guy, you know, the
always.
Killer.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what I'm going to be cast as, you know, just because I sing with a low voice and I'm tall, and that's the typecast thing.
Can I say I'm sure you would sing it better than Russell Crowe did in the film version of Les Misérables?
Oh, well, I hope so.
I'm thinking you have to go back to some, I don't know, classic Kiss Me, Kate or something. You have to really reach back to find a lot of bass baritone, any bass baritone leads who are not the bad guys.
Right. That's true. And I love, you know, the traditional Broadway, you know, the old school. I much more relate to that than, you know, the current thing that's been going on.
So Israel has a very rich pop music tradition, very different from the American pop music tradition. And when you go to concerts, Israelis always sing along with the singer, I've noticed, which American audiences don't do in the same way. Is that beginning to stretch into Israel? Has that custom kind of shifted over to the American songbook yet?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it's very popular, as you said, for Israelis to join in, but that is for the Israeli songbook, not the American songbook. So I don't think the American songbook is still that familiar to the extent that, you know, audiences can sing along. But they sure do when it's the Israeli songbook. And we have, you know, evenings of, you know, we call it Shira B'Tzibur, so it's like a sing-along when, you know, you have the words on a big screen and, you know, you're inviting the audience to join in, but that's a different story.
Yeah, I remember being in Tel Aviv last summer going to the opera, and outside there was one of these Shira B'Tzibur kind of things, and there must have been 1,000 people there all singing along on the Israeli songbook. So much of the American classic songbook, so many of those songs are written by Jewish composers. Does it make any difference to you?
As long as it's, you know, it's a good song, a good lyric, and the music is great, I'll be happy to sing it. But it certainly warms my heart when I know that, you know, these are Jewish composers, for sure.
You started with opera training first?
Well, this was, I would call it like classical training.
Classical vocal training.
Exactly, yeah.
And why didn't you stay with opera?
That's an interesting question. Well, I think my first voice teacher actually said that I should stick only with opera, but I was, I guess, not as engaged with opera, and I didn't want to limit myself only to that genre. I was very much attracted to the Great American Songbook and musical theater, and so I've been trying to combine all of those over the last few years.
I think everybody's first vocal teacher told them they should stay with opera.
That, I guess. I don't know. Probably. I mean,
because they all started with opera and it was classical. I had the same experience when I was studying voice originally.
That's great.
Well, if you want to be an opera singer.
Right.
The popularity of the Great American Songbook in America has never exactly waned, but then it seemed generational, and then it's kind of popped back, so that there have been times when it seems like, okay, that's something that people that came of age in the 40s and 50s still love, or 30s, but yet it keeps sort of cycling back with new performers and new stars. Where do you see it right now?
Well, it's hard for me to tell you because I'm not that much into the opera world anymore.
Well, no, I don't mean opera so much, but in terms of, Gershwin and Richard Rodgers and sort of all of the classic stuff that you're doing now in your shows, it seems like that style of singing has kind of had a renaissance again.
Absolutely. I mean, and I'm just looking, at my career and over the last decade, every show that is based on the Great American Songbook, whether it's Broadway and All That Jazz, which was my first show, and then Las Vegas, Tel Aviv, Shalom Hollywood, Tonight a Musical. I mean, the audiences really want to hear that kind of music. So I'm very happy about that because this is what I'm most passionate about.
What singers did you grow up listening to? Who did you try to emulate in your style, or did you?
Well, I absolutely love Frank Sinatra and Barbra Streisand. I mean, these are my two big icons that I've always loved. I think I was first really inspired by Barbra Streisand. I remember my dad got in on a Friday afternoon when I was, I think, 13 or 14 years old, and he brought this videotape of a concert version of Barbra Streisand, and I was blown away by the orchestrations and the music that I was not familiar with at the time, because this was, again, a Great American songbook mostly, and musical theater numbers that I had no idea where they came from. So, those voices, it's unbelievable voices, and I fell in love with that music, the genre, the singers.
Do you try to emulate Sinatra's phrasing, which is so unique?
You know what? I'm really trying to do it my way and not seriously.
Of course that was Sinatra's big hit, but of course you're one of his many hits, but no, I understand exactly what you mean. You're trying to be
I'm singing it my
Isaac
way.
Isaac Sutton, right?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's already, Frank Sinatra, there's one Barbra Streisand. So, and I think there's room for everyone, everyone has their own unique stamped and style, and that's what I believe in.
When you sing American songs from this classic songbook, as you do sometimes in Hebrew, is it a different experience singing it in Hebrew than in English?
I'm not sure it's different. I mean, it's certainly allowing the audience, I guess, to relate more, because some of them maybe don't understand exactly what the words mean, when I say it in English, but when it's in Hebrew, it's very accessible. So I enjoy singing in Hebrew very much because it's, it's my mother language. So anytime I get to sing in Hebrew, it's a great joy.
Besides Company, is there a musical that you have thought about doing? Would you do a musical again sometime soon?
Oh, I would love to do more musical theater work. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like I said, Javert in Les Mis. I mean, if that comes along, that will be amazing. But, you know, any other musical would be great, too. I mean, I always like to combine theater work with my one-man shows. So that's always a...
Because musicals are so continue to be huge in America, that they're not, they don't have the same kind of resonance in Israel. And Israel is, of course, a smaller country. Do you think that, you know, your future will mostly be performing in the States?
Well, I'm trying over the last year to, you know, to do more shows here rather than in Israel. But my career is still based in Israel. It has been for the last decade, and I've established an audience that, you know, follows me, and which I'm very, very fortunate about. So
absolutely.
So it wouldn't be, I guess, as wise, you know, to just stop performing there. But I'm trying, you know, to expand and perform in other countries as well. And my opening night actually in Israel is at the National Theater on October 28th. At the National Theater, it's called Habima.
At Habima in Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
That's quite an honor.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's another season, and, you know, the show's still going strong. You know, we've done many shows the last season, but, you know, it's always great to come back home, you know, where my career is based.
Is there any artist that you'd really like to work with, to do duets with, for example, or any... group that you'd like to work with?
Well, I would love to sing with Barbra Streisand someday.
Mm.
Yeah, that would be pretty incredible.
She's not performing publicly very often these days, is she?
I know. I've seen her last concert here in New York in May, because I did a concert here in May at the Metropolitan Room, and then I think the following day she did a concert at Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And my parents came. I remember I got tickets for all of us, and we all went. It was an unforgettable experience.
Beautiful experience to talk about. Have you composed any music? Have you thought about writing songs?
You know what? I have not composed anything yet, but this is definitely something that I'm looking into nowadays. I would love to have, you know, a CD with original songs, material, and... hopefully in Hebrew, yeah, to even expand my audience.
I want to thank singer Isaac Sutton for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about your concerts and your performing? What's the best place to look?
Well, I guess the best place is my website or my Facebook page, Isaac Sutton. And like I said, I will be performing here in New York October 21st at Feinstein's 54 Below, which is a dream come true. And then going on tour again in Israel starting October 28th at the National Theater and on tour across the country.
We wish you continued success. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure.
Our pleasure. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out from Isaac Sutton.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be David A. Goldstein, author of the very entertaining book, Alley-Oop to Aliyah, African-American Hoopsters in the Holy Land. And, of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or stream us from TooJewishRadio.com, our website. Our play out this morning on Too Jewish comes from our guest, Isaac Sutton, of course, his rendition of the Broadway song, I Am What I Am. My friends, may you have a Shavuot Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
I am what I am. I don't want praise. I don't want pity. I'll beat my own drum. Some think it's noise. I think it's pretty. And so what if I love each sparkle and each spangle? Why not try to see things from a different angle. Your life is a sham till you can shout out loud, I am what I am. I am what I am, and what I am needs no excuses.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.